This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, oh boy, the number one fuck boy, standing 6'2", 307 pounds. Cut him some slack, he's working on it, folks. From the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, it's Johnny G. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, from A Star Is Born, abortion is healthcare. Okay, at least that's a little more zeitgeisty than you even showing up. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, my daily side co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur is a senior dog, and I do not have steps leading up to my office couch, so he does not hang out in here as much as he used to. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, you know him, you love him, one's been on before, we're coming back. We got Jeff Garlock and Jason Gore of 107 The Hawk.
I mean, couldn't ask for a better intro.
I loved it. The only thing that would have made that better is if you would have said, and now it's Audio Slave.
Right, just you know. Cranked it.
Coaches. High and Mighty.
Professional recording artist. Yeah, I'm just so good at this that when you realize in the middle of your intro that you don't remember the numbers to the guy's podcast.
Nor should you, but because you're a professional, you did the perfect yell just a little bit louder so you could get slurred through it.
I was like, Jeff Garlock and Jason Gore from 107 The Hawk.
I don't remember him half the time either, so it doesn't matter.
I remember, guys. I take this shit seriously.
It's hard to
forget. I do.
It's never forget because it's 91.1.
Yeah.
Never forget.
Yep.
Hashtag never forget.
Hey, we had it in 2000, which is really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people blamed us. They thought we predicted it.
Hey, don't blame classic rock, baby. I must tell you.
A lot of people blamed us, but not a lot of people were giving us credit for how cutting edge we were with the idea of a podcast.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I worked in classic rock around 9/11. And I remember having to remove a ton of songs from our library because we couldn't play them anymore because
they were all performed by Al-Qaeda.
Yes.
covers a bomb track by Osama bin Laden.
Yes. Yeah. but we couldn't play
Deep Purple Smoke on the Water, Fire in the Sky. Like,
okay. Thank you.
No, Dave Matthews Crashed Into Me. Like, a lot of shit went out the window. I'm from New York. I grew up listening to all New York radio stations, Howard, Opie, the classic rock, WCBS FM. My dad has a cousin named Bruce, and cousin Brucey was his nickname. So I was steeped in it. And now you saying that, Jason, is making me think of like drive time DJs having to talk about 9/11. Yes. And it looks like the second tower has been hit. You know, like,
all right.
What do you think happened?
I don't know. I'm just like, you know, crack and I shotgun another beer, man.
Not today, beer mug. Not today.
That's really great, beer mug. Let's get back into the rock. And we'll let you know it's Benny and the Jets, Elton John.
Oh, wait, that's on the list. Shit.
Oh, it's just Benny alone, no Jets. Don't you worry.
You are correct, Jeff. That's on the fucking list. I'm looking at it right now. There was Crash Into Me was banned on 9/12.
Oh, shit.
Fucking hippies were sad that day.
For only that reason. The Chi Lights, Have You Seen Her, was banned. Because I guess you couldn't question, like, have you seen her?
Well, tell me, have you seen her?
About somebody
that is someone working very hard to find a connection to the sadness.
Well, that's just like all that shit is just anti-litigation prep, right? Like you don't want to be the guy whose wife hasn't been found yet in the rubble and tell me, have you seen her, please?
That guy calls in and requests, have you seen her?
or he's like, no, I'm just asking, have you seen her? Coming right up, we have the Chi Lights. No, I'm serious. Has anyone seen her?
Oh, Jesus, that's not on the list anymore. Like a taxi goes by playing na 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 na, hey, hey.
And the husband's just like, oh god.
What did they talk about on that day on your station?
I have no idea. Sugar Ray's Fly was also banned.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally that's a good one. That's a good one. Good time to ban it.
I classic rock is very specific to me. I'm 41 now, so I wasn't like of the age to listen to classic rock. My dad was a classic rock guy, but he in the car listened to oldies, his dad's music. Yeah. So it was a complicated situation. Like once in a while, we'd be rocking out to like, so, you know, nearly contemporary stuff in the 80s, like listening to 60s and 70s rock. But right. so frequently, we were listening to like the Big Bopper and shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because he would play WCBS FM 101.1. It was our oldies. We play your favorite oldies.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Who's the midday, like Bradway Bill Steve or Bill Lee or whatever his name is?
I could not tell you at this
point. Oh, because it's all the same guys. Like none of them have died. They're right. fucking vampires.
They're still going.
Yes. They're still solid gold oldies.
Yes. the windows at the CBS 101 studio are all blacked out so they can work whenever they need to. They're like, and now it's lightning strikes on CBS 101.1.
Yeah, it was. We've talked about it before on The Hawk that like my babysitter, who I was with all the time, but she was solid gold oldies. So I despise solid gold oldies because it was just constantly on. And if you thought classic rock played the same five songs.
Yeah, that was already whittled down. Yes. Like that had an extra two decades of whittling down to what still was alive. Yeah.
So much coasters.
God. I think that's a Northeast thing, though, because I grew up in the South and nobody really like everybody just pretty much listened to classic rock. And then now, you know, when I moved to New Jersey in 08, I lived there for 10 years. Like you go to any grocery store or any like cars around, like especially the grocery stores, though, like you go in and it's an oldie station.
Yeah.
It's like you've stepped onto the set of The Sopranos.
I wonder whom. Yeah. who wrote the book of love?
I always wanted to be a gangster.
Right? Yeah. Yeah,
here we go.
Well, honestly, I wonder if it's culturally like the Italian-American experience,
right.
too.
It could
because,
be, yeah.
Because that is what it felt like a little bit. Because like the patriarch of my family was my mom's father, this guy.
Yeah. And no Jimmy offense to your family, Gabers, that ain't flying in the South. I'll
no,
tell you
no, exactly. Jimmy Valentino. You know, my dad. It's funny right now. It's crazy. My dad and grandpa were both IOTC because they worked at Fox 5 in New York City. So they were like union guys, but they were like the crooked nose union guys, like, you know, like family union. Like everyone was like so and so from Hell's Kitchen. It's my neighbor's cousin. Everyone was a cousin, a neighbor, like, and they were either everyone had some kind of Tino name. Johnny Petrini. These guys were all named shit like that.
They arranged like a couple no show jobs at the station.
Oh yeah, my grandfather was an elevator operator.
Hell
he worked
yes.
like full time as like a freight elevator operator.
Oh, that rules! That's the best.
That is some serious shit. Like,
everything that fucking happens in that building.
I know, yeah. And you're sneaking fucking executives out. You know what I mean? Like you're
sneaking fucking JFK out.
right. Not alone.
No, right. Never alone.
You're bringing them out with Rosanna Scotto, whoever the fuck. Rosanna Scotto came to my dad's funeral, and like everyone on Long Island was like,
"Oh my god,
did she really?"
Yeah, because my dad worked her show, and so a lot of people were like, "Holy shit, look who's here!" It's like made my dad seem like this like local legend.
Oh,
I was like,
that
yeah.
fucking rule!
I mean, it does make him a local legend. That just seemed like. I mean, I'm sitting here.
When I literally was
years
like,
later
what?
Going, Rosanna Scotto, was like,
that's you.
It was some serious Long Island street cred to have that. That was rad.
And that's definitely like a hometown story now. Like, oh yeah, Rosanna Scotto was at that funeral.
Oh yeah, if she comes up, my mother will say like, you know, she came to John's funeral.
Yeah,
you know, she was at my husband's funeral. Yeah, we're so tight. Like we haven't spoken to her a minute in like the last 12 years since my dad. But like,
I should check in with Rosanna.
Oh, Rosie, friend. Yeah, she's a bit of a family friend. Oh, we know Rosanna. Oh yeah. We have pasta with her all the time. But yeah, so classic rock was like, I was confused as to what it was. But classic rock was all over pop culture in the 80s and 90s. It was in movies. Yeah. It was in commercials. But it wasn't really being played in my house until like I got old enough to be like a little more curious about music and notice like my dad's records didn't reflect what we listened to in the car. It would be like...
Right.
he had like sticky fingers and all
this. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He had the Woodstock LPs. Like, he had all this vinyl that I was like, we would put on and be like, oh, yeah, you would know, like, just from being an avid consumer of culture.
Yeah.
Honestly, almost everything I've learned about pop culture history, I learned from The Simpsons. Like, sure. If I'm being, yeah. like, anything I've learned about movies or music of that grownups are into, I, like, right. learned from The Simpsons somehow. But, like, that being said, like, and I remember unpacking that and being like, this, and, you know, I'm listening to hip-hop at the time, like, hip-hop, uh-huh. and I'm like, but, like, and, like, some of the new rock that's coming out, like, grunge and shit like that, sure. I'm into, oh, yeah. Weezer, I'm into, like, anyone else.
Yeah.
But then you stumble upon, like, some fucking old, and you're like, oh shit, I think I'm a Creedence guy. And like, oh, yeah. oh, being God. Like
that's
14.
Watched so many Vietnam docs that now you're a Creedence yes. guy.
But being like 14 and like kind of understanding the plight of the draftee yeah. because you've been listening to yeah. so much CCR, it's oh, like God, such yeah. a weird, it weirdly ages you in a way, like it makes you this kind of like old soul. Like,
yeah.
Like, I loved Buffalo Springfield. Yeah.
Oh, I fucking love Buffalo Springfield.
Listen to CCR explains Nam more than our shell-shocked relative
I know,
who refused right? to talk about it and then just perpetuated yeah. the nightmare that was that war.
Ken Burns should do a new documentary series that really marries CCR with Vietnam.
I guarantee, I haven't Fortunate watched Stuns. Ken Burns Vietnam, but I guarantee CCR shows up once
in a while. Oh, they 100% do. Yeah. I had to stop halfway through because it was just like 50% crying old men who couldn't get over killing oh, someone God. 40 years ago. And you're like, yeah, trauma never leaves you.
And then it's like, here's
down
CCR.
Down on the corner, yeah. out in the street.
Old man's just losing his shit.
Yeah, like the fucking Forrest Gump just tied, like, was the nail in the coffin that just tied those together forever. A movie that takes place across decades when they hit Vietnam plays. And then you're like, oh, forever, it's there.
Yeah,
thank you.
Can but smell.
It is a big thing. I mean, we've talked about it amongst the two of us, and it can also kind of relate to whatever your relationship is or was, like, complicated with your dad, especially with classic rock.
Right.
Because that was, yeah, for yeah. me, it was like, it was always on. Connecticut always had 99 Rock, WPLR, and WCCC. We always were listening to it when we were working in the yard. And my dad was just yelling at me about not doing things right. But then in my brain, I was like, well, fuck this. I'm never listening to Black Sabbath. Like, because right. one, they only have two songs as far as I know.
Dude,
write some more songs.
Yeah. That's the realest shit, too. That's good call, because it's not till you get an old album when you're
yes.
a kid.
Right.
I think we're all similar ages. It's like until you get an album and you're like, fuck. Like, when someone burned Killer Queen and Classic Queen, those two sort of like greatest hits-esque
oh,
albums
yeah.
they
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
Someone burned that onto a cassette, one on each side.
Oh,
and
God.
It was, gave it to me when I was like 12 or you know, because I loved Wayne's World and I loved
yeah,
the song
yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody. And my pop-pop's neighbor, shout out Rhonda and Feliz, was like, oh, we gotta make, they have so many good songs. I'm like,
yeah.
I love Bohemian Rhapsody. And then I got that and I was like,
oh, yeah.
Oh my God, I felt like a god knowing about these songs. Everyone's like, We Will Rock You rules. I'm like, you haven't even heard Fat Bottom Girls, dude.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And
that's the thing about Queen, though. They had like such a fucking, they're my all-time favorite band.
Same.
All-time
Hell yeah,
favorite Gorn. Band.
Yeah.
You know, I've been a fan since 81. I was like, you know, my mom was playing Queen the Game over and over, so
oh,
I grew up listening to, like, you know,
oh,
crazy
I was like
little
a
thing
board game
love.
By Queen.
So
Queen the
mom
game
whipped out Queen the Game.
Now
it was
John
a homemade
Deacon.
Board game. It was a loose tabletop Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah,
Jason's
I played
Brian
May.
Freddie Mercury, and it's like, well, this game doesn't work at a couple levels.
If I roll 10, I can keep myself alive. That's a deep Queen joke. Yeah. But no, like,
if I roll 2, I love my car. Wait, what?
They're a band that just spans, like, you keep naming songs with them and you're like, fuck, really? Oh, fuck, really? And like,
yeah.
you know.
And it took a long time. Like, I think that's also a good call, Gabe, is that, like, for our generation especially, there are those, you know, there's like Scorsese movies that let you know that the Rolling Stones exist.
Right.
And then you've got fucking Vietnam documentaries that let you know CCR. But Wayne's World was like, I don't think I yeah. ever really put two and two together that was a band until Bohemian Rhapsody. And then it was many years later when someone was like, you listen to metal. Have you listened to Ogre Battle? And then I was like, whoa,
yeah.
This is heavy as fuck, man.
Do you know what Lorne originally wanted that song to be? Like, he was fighting Mike Myers on this.
What do you want it to be?
Welcome to the Jungle.
An idiot.
Oh, man. What an insane.
Yeah.
That's so funny. That's that's such a perfect sliding doors moment of like.
Yeah.
Oh,
who knows?
God, can you imagine?
Maybe, who knows? 9/11 happens 10 years earlier if they play Welcome to the Jungle.
If we let Lorne have his way all the time, this country would have been under siege, man. Oh, but I'll say, too, with Wayne's, what I'm remembering, and people would only know this if they're our age and they watched it in the theater, it was
so
my like reminder introduction of, hey, Stairway to Heaven's going to be the song that is played at every fucking junior high dance you go to.
Yes.
Because then Led Zeppelin like sued him, and then the version that's in the VHS, the joke doesn't even make sense. When he points, he goes, "No, no stairway." But in the VHS, it goes like,
"Yeah, it's like,"
and it has nothing to do with the song. And it's like, wait, that's not a joke. That doesn't make
stairway
any sense.
Denied.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then the tag to the joke doesn't make sense in the VHS.
Like, were you playing Stairway?
But that was
I never knew that, man.
Yeah, they took it out because there was some issue with label or something. So if you watch the VHS version, and they might have finally put it
back. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I remember being upset, just being like, what the fuck is this?
That's when I heard Stairway to Heaven. Like, that's when I was like, oh, what is that in reference to? And someone's like, it's a song called Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
Your dad puts it on the record player, and you're like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, this song is kind of cool. And then you're like, I guess that band is kind of like, I mean, if I'm being honest, it's like, this is a little gay, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like this,
at that time.
That's the word I would have used in like the 80s and 90s, unfortunately. But then you get into like, you get a little older and someone's like, yeah, man, they like singing about hobbits and shit. You're like, wait, what? I love D&D. And it's like, they sing that one romantic song, Stairway to Heaven. Everyone's like, no, dude, you got to hear.
Yeah.
Because
the lemon is him jizzing on her leg, man. Come on. You got to listen to the lyrics.
Well, it's like singles were huge. Like, singles were the way because we had music videos. We had comp albums. We had movie soundtracks. Now, I think younger people had to, like, not younger people, sorry. People older than us would buy albums. And because it would be like, you'd hear a single on the radio, you buy an album. Our generation was kind of like that, but that's harder with oldies. Newer generations have the database or Kazaa or Spotify or whatever. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, oh, Led Zeppelin, you can just hit Led Zeppelin, and it's like singles are kind of amorphous at that point. You can maybe go by most plays or whatever, but you're just listening to Led Zeppelin. For us, it was like the way in was to hear the single 100 times and be like, I hate this song. And it's like, no, there's so much more than that song. And breaking that open was such a wild experience.
I watched MTV so much, and I watched Headbangers Ball, and I watched 120 Minutes. I never missed an episode of either of them.
I didn't do anything cool in high school until I started playing in bands. In senior year, I sat in my basement with my friends and watched SNL, Stern, and Headbangers Ball on loop.
Right.
When Stern had the big hair and would just go, ooh, Robin, Snapple.
Yeah, my senior year was the same thing, but my grandmother was living with us, and she took over my room, so I had to sleep on a mattress in the middle of the fucking basement family room, which was great when you think about it, because then I could, like, play video games and watch late night Cinemax whenever I wanted.
Yeah, or if your dad got that de-scrambler cable box in the back of Rolling Stone, and you could get that Spice Channel, and be like, why are they looping this so many weird times?
My parents had that illegal box, but it was in their room.
Oh,
so like,
damn.
So, and their room was upstairs in the house I lived in when I was like 12 or 13. Their room was upstairs alone, and the front, you came down the stairs from their bedroom, and it went directly to the front door. So trying to sneak, there's already so many fucked up Freudian layers of trying to jerk off in your parents' bedroom. But then you also hold the thing of like, they can come home at any moment, and I'm trapped upstairs. So you have to like pre-predict the car sound.
Yes.
So I'm like sprinting down my parents' stairs with half a heart on so many times just because I heard a car come down the street. But that
God bless
was
you, Rolling Stone cable box.
I did the same fucking thing. But I would also record it and put it like, but I would label it in my collection like 1992 MTV Video Music Awards.
Oh, yeah.
No, wait, my parents didn't give a fuck about
it. I have all my VHS that I'm waiting to transfer. Uh-huh. I'm worried that I'm going to stumble upon some shit. Trying to show my kid like Al TV.
Yes.
For 3 hours when Even Worse came out. And then all of a sudden it's like Inner Sanctum.
Yeah.
It's like
Emmanuel in space.
Softcore.
Oh, God the almighty. Things we do as a child.
It's funny. Classic rock is so associated with my childhood, but it's not the music of our childhood, which is such a complicated.
Right.
Like, but that's how music works. Like people.
Yeah.
Like, but it's so changed because of like, with mainstream radio for the longest, or celestial radio, whatever it's called, but for so long we had that it made us all have the same points of reference, like locally. It's like no one was getting totally new music sent to them unless they had an older brother who lived out of town or someone who sought this stuff out via like magazines or something. Like there was no way to get, so like if a song, there was a summer on Z100, a not classic rock, there was a summer where Frankie Valli's song, the Sherry Baby, played like all the time. It like, Oh, What a Night, like pierced pop culture again and was being played on like mainstream.
That shit keeps coming back. I think it's coming back again. I think in 2 years, it's going to come right back out.
I blame weddings. It feels like it gets in the wedding cycle somehow.
Yeah. I'll guarantee you some famous TikToker is going to be like, yo, have you heard this song? Do it. And then it's like complete.
It's huge.
And like, and your fucking like son is 8 years old. And he's like, Sherry Baby. And you're like, how the fuck did you hear that?
I watched these dudes react to Sherry Baby.
Right.
Just like, whoa.
I love that recurring like bit or meme where it's like young black dudes listening to like classic rock or like throwing Genesis on or whatever, and it's like
number one band, and I'm psyched to, or it's especially when it's like young black dudes react to Primus.
Right.
Like sick solo, and I'm like, you ain't wrong. I don't know what I'm getting out of it, but
wait, did you just say Genesis is your number one band?
It has become my number one band of all time.
It's crazy you say this. Mm-hmm. 6 months ago, Invisible Touch just got in my, I was like, oh man, that song fucking rules. And I started playing it again, and it was completely back in my head. And then I started being like, let me throw Genesis on Spotify. Let me like Genesis Radio. This is Genesis or whatever.
Yes.
And I'm like, I never really listened to them. Of course, I know a lot of like their big songs and a lot of Phil Collins songs. I know a lot of them just from being alive for 41 years. But I'm back and and it's funny. And I'm trying to find parallels between the bands I like all the time. To me, and so Queen and Genesis weirdly have a similar like. If I'm not a music person, so I can never articulate things musically. But see if you can get along. There's something. They both play like kind of varied music inside of one, but I would say a commonality they both have is like, and I hate this word, but I mean it in its original definition, like epicness. There's an epicness to their music.
They have a grandeur about them.
Grandeur. That's a great one that lets me eliminate epic and bacon from my fucking dialogue.
Exactly. Well, because they both are in progressive worlds. Queen less so, but still they have so many songs that might as well be progressive rock.
Which is
big offshoot of classic rock. Like for me, like that was the huge moment was like, I was just a punk metal hardcore kid. I didn't listen to any of this shit. And every once in a while, I'd be like, yeah, maybe Thin Lizzy's okay. And then it's like, I graduated college and I remember distinctly hearing Yes's Heart of the Sunrise on the radio and being like, this sounds like metal. Oh my God. And then all of a sudden, someone else did the same thing you did where they were like, I always thought Genesis was just like a pop band and just like whatever. And then I got Foxtrot and I was like, oh, let me hear it. And then my life changed and I was like, oh, they were a humongous progressive rock band. Peter Gabriel was in it. They have 32-minute songs. Oh, my God. And then as time went on, and this is where me and Jason really bond, then like me and my buddy Mike Pace almost started Genesis podcast because we're like, wait. Yeah, the era of Duke and Abacab is unbelievable.
That's my favorite era. I mean, I love the Gabriel era.
Yeah.
But that's it for me, man. That's it.
And that's the heart, because I would always, for a long time, be Gabriel era. But then, as you know, and then there were three is my favorite, probably.
Yeah.
And that's when it's just the three of them, but it's still progressive rock. And they are just the greatest band because they do everything all at once. But also they are like Queen, because Queen does everything all at once and doesn't fail at it, which is the kind of the parallel, I think, with Genesis.
Right,
that.
Right, right.
It's not
they
just
pull
like,
it off.
Yeah, maybe yeah. Don't do that one again. Except right. For, you know, who done it or whatever on yeah. Abacab.
It's also one of those things where it's like, they do such a different variety of song where like one of them's going to be like happy and fun. You're like a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And then you've got something really, truly creepy like Mama.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you're just like, shit,
or
this
Home
band
by
rules.
The Sea, even where you're yes. Late in and you're like, this is a story about ghost stories on the yeah. Sea. Like, OK.
Yeah.
Athletic Greens, we're talking AG1, baby. Look at this. I'm packing for a bachelor party right now. Well, I'm taking a break to record some ads because Emma requested. But I was packing for a bachelor party in my toiletry kit. I'm going to be there for Friday morning, Saturday morning, and Sunday morning. Guess what I'm bringing? 30 packs of AG1 travel packs. And, okay, yeah, I only need three. I'm not taking 10 every morning. But I'm going to be handing them out to my boys, making sure that they get their 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food-sourced super ingredients of the highest quality every morning, just like me. I'm going to be getting my boys up, getting them on the AG1, and treating ourselves right. Now, I say this all the time, but it cannot be said enough. The most important thing about AG1 for me is that the all-in-one formula makes it easy for me to cover my nutritional bases with one step early in the morning. Nothing's easier than telling me to just drink a drink. And so you shake up your AG1, chug or stir in your AG1. It's that easy. I use a little shaky shake. And you just smash down 20 ounces of water and a scoop of AG1 and bang, 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 you got the first healthy step of your day. And after that, what are you going to do when you make your coffee? You're going to add sugar? No, you're already taking Athletic Greens. You're working on yourself. You don't need to add sugar. You don't need to get the full-blown latte with extra syrup. No, treat yourself right. Oh, yeah, maybe I will make the gym because I had my Athletic Greens this morning. I'm making my step. Make that first easy early choice. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to athleticgreens.com/mighty. That's athleticgreens.com/mighty. Check it out. When you look at bags of dog food, you see pictures of bright carrots, juicy steaks, little fish swimming up the river, a little fresh salmon jumping around, some beautiful shrimp. You don't really see shrimp, but when you open the bag, you don't get any of that. You get like burnt, smelly pellets. Dog food, it's time for some fresh thinking. Feed your dog the farmer's dog. It's real, fresh, healthy food with whole meat and veggies, gently cooked in human-grade kitchens to preserve the nutritional value. Just tell them about your dog. They'll deliver a personalized meal plan for as little as $2 a day. The meals arrive in pre-portioned, ready-to-serve packs, conveniently delivered on your schedule. And dog people across the country have already ordered millions of meals from the farmer's dog. It's never been easier to invest in your dog's health with fresh food. So go to the Farmer's Dog, TheFarmersDog.com/mighty, thefarmersdog.com/mighty, MIGHTY. Get me 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at thefarmersdog.com/mighty. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to thefarmersdog.com/mighty to get 50% off. That's thefarmersdog.com/mighty. Go to thefarmersdog.com/mighty to get 50% off your first box and free shipping. Did you hear it enough? FarmersDog.com/mighty. Talk to me a little bit about progressive rock, because as I've heard it articulated, I'm into that. But what makes something prog rock? Like, I know I always use like I kind of always talk about the content of the lyrics when I discuss prog rock, you know, and it's like, and you're riding a dragon to the, you know, like I talk
about
that
like, far off.
Yeah.
You're not that far off.
But what makes it progressive rock? Because this is something that I think I'm into based on like all the bands that represent it.
Well, and you are too, because I know at least at one point, like you might still be, but like you're into like Arcade Fire.
Yes.
And like, and so to me, that's like an epicness that like I can't hang with just because I'm like, there's other dudes who do better epicness.
Right, right. It is yeah, Arcade Fire was like one of my favorite bands for a long time. Yeah,
sure.
I saw them live 8 times. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because they fit that mold too, in a way. Yeah.
I do think before, and Jeff is the expert. Jeff is the prog expert, and before he really takes you down a ride here that's going to make you understand the entire genre, I'm just going to say it simply: more notes,
like a lot
across the board.
Yeah,
every instrument's playing a lot more notes.
But I would say even further, because I like
see
to
that's
say
why
for,
it was the short answer.
Yes, exactly. For differentiation from jam
I would
band,
say even longer. Right. Okay, that's great, Jason. But if I were to say it longer,
I would say it longer.
To differentiate from jam bands, because there is a fucking Venn diagram
oh, completely.
Overlap.
Yes,
right,
yes.
Right.
Like, it's more notes, but with a focus. Like, and we've talked about, I think, Jason, where it was like, it's improv comedy versus sketch comedy.
Yes.
But with a lot of notes where like
they have the same heart. Their brains work
yeah.
differently.
Yeah. And they both are looking for game and all that shit. But
right.
And, and in general, with, you know, progressive rock, it is just like a catch all, you know, radio and classic radio and AOR record label term to just say. Bands that are doing stuff beyond the 3 minute and 30 second pop format.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, because ultimately there is connective tissue even in who played, but like, Yes does not sound like King Crimson, really.
Right.
And does not sound like Rush.
Which
and
does
Genesis,
not sound like Jethro Tull.
And does not sound. And then really when you get deep, then it's like, and certainly don't sound like Gentle Giant, who straight up are just doing madrigals in three part, which you would like. Gabrus, because it might as well be fucking Sword of the Valiant.
Because
it really is just like
Canterbury. What are these guys' names? I'm taking notes.
Gentle Giant.
Gentle Giant.
I mean, I like the name already.
Don't worry. The first song's called The Advent of Panurge on Octopus.
I'm in.
There you go. There you go.
But like,
is
so,
Rush,
yeah,
sense, sorry, real quick, just
yeah,
to,
yeah,
is Rush the most indicative of, I feel like when people say prog rock, I feel like the most popular or the most most used one is Rush. And Rush, I don't dislike, but I'm not really into either.
And
but
it took a
Canadian
long time for
prog,
me as
man.
Well. It's Canadian prog. It does have its own vibe.
It has its own fucking vibe.
Because even but honestly, there's a band Saga who are
I just
want to
say,
prog.
It's rare you host a podcast where two guys at the same time go, well, that's because it's Canadian prog. Okay?
I
appreciate
why,
this opportunity.
This is why the motto of the Hawk and my life is alienating through specificity.
Oh, yeah. There's like, yeah, there aren't that many people that are going to get that joke.
That's but, Canadian prog, my friend.
Come on.
But no, I guess I would say, because even like people still just like can't wrap their brains around Genesis necessarily being a prog band, even though they're like the ultimate. I mean, and Pink Floyd still like they get lumped in, but. If you're talking to like a prog nerd, they might even balk at that. But I would say Rush, yeah. And prog nerds are maybe the worst.
Yeah,
and we hate all fans of things.
I was an improv nerd and a Magic the Gathering nerd. I've been all the worst nerds. Don't worry about it. Yeah, prog rock nerd cannot be much.
I
was into funny. Let's talk. I got into metal for a little bit solely because of a friend's older brother. Like. Uh-huh. Like I think how most people in the 80s and 90s got into Metallica.
Yes.
Got into metal.
Metal. You know,
Metallica's a little mainstream at the time and you're kind of into it. And if you're like me playing sports or whatever and you're like, everyone's jamming on Enter Sandman in the locker room and shit, getting hyped to Metallica. And you're like, this is pretty rad. Then you mention Metallica around Tommy Martin, who's got, you know, Iron Maiden posters. And you're like, he's like, you like Metallica? Do you know Megadeth? Do you know this? Do you know?
Yeah.
And then you get into all the news, all the shit that was also popular and cool at the time. And that was like really eye opening. And now I feel like at 41, I kind of need that for prog rock. And if I'm being honest, a little in my aging, and I think due to my hobbies, I've been getting into like yacht rock. Like,
Yacht rock's
good.
The greatest.
I mean,
look, man, my maybe third sketch at UCB was about Christopher Cross sailings. So I've been doing this shit for too long of alienating everyone with my bullshit.
I was a director or an actor on
you might have
on one of your early ones because.
And then right after, I was like, I got this song about Looking Glass's Brandy. We want to do a sketch about that as well. You know, yacht rock is the greatest. I mean, that's the thing. If you stick around with us long enough, Gabrus, we'll just get you down to holes where all of a sudden I'm getting you to listen to dungeon synth.
I mean, those are two words that would be in my, and now I normally make the search terms joke exclusively to reference to Pornhub, but
oh no, type it into Pornhub. It works really well.
Right there.
It's
yeah,
still
it's
a stepmom doing
sure.
it says shit, but whatever.
Yeah. Oh no, my stepmom's stuck under my dungeon coffee table.
You would actually love dungeon synth because it truly is like an outgrowth of black metal, but it's just dudes playing music that can mostly best be described as the music from a Lost King's Quest game.
Yes.
Bro.
Like, that's truly what
that is so fucking true.
It's antique. Since it's rudimentary, and I listen to so many hours of it. Non-stop.
Bro, send me a playlist. Send me a playlist you like from that, because that's synth. I realize how much I and it's making a comeback because of my love of action movies, as you guys know.
Oh god,
I got so into synth and got so into Tangerine Dream and all that kind of music and. All those
guys.
I have
38 LPs by Tangerine Dream, and I don't have anywhere close to enough of them.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you were like, when I first got into Carpenter, you were the guy I knew to go to talk about that, who I like his music as much as his movies. If not, sometimes it's the best part of his movies, unfortunately. Yeah. But like, I got so into synth, and now it's back so hard in a cool way, and that's been really fun, and finding more and more of it, like, there's this band, The Midnight, which kind of does like sax and synth, which is very sexy movie kind of vibe. But this dungeon synth shit sounds fucking rad.
I think you'd find it. I mean, you can, and there's all these little offshoots like Hole Dweller is Hobbit synth, which is truly just sounds like music for being Hole in Brandywine. The craziest one is Grandma's Cottage, and it looks like paintings that would be in your grandmother's house, and it straight up is just supposed to emulate having cookies at your grandma's house. And this I listen to that when I write a lot.
Dude,
this is the best. You'll get all the best thing I've ever seen.
I can't believe I've also like just unpacked to myself that since the pandemic, the three genres of music I've been getting most into are prog rock, yacht rock. I mean, I'm still listening to a shit ton of hip hop and indie rock, but I've always been into that. But yacht rock, prog rock, and synth have really taken over my life, and I'm starting to feel like someone's older brother. You know what I mean? Like,
look, man, when you want to escape the entire fucking world because it's a nightmare, you become someone's older brother. Right? All the music you listen to is escape music, like like synth music about sitting in your grandma's house drinking tea.
Right. Yeah. For me, it's like all synth music. I'm fantasizing driving a speedboat full of cocaine across the fucking from
go,
South
man,
America.
Crockett's theme really is the best. Jan Hammer really fucking nailed it on that one. I don't really want to rewatch all of Miami Vice, just a couple scenes.
I'm looking at some of these covers for Grandma's Cottage, and it's like
it's
a fucking Courier and Ives picture.
The song Painting Eggs is wonderful. But this is where my brain got. This is why I also have 1,600 LPs behind me that,
Jesus Christ.
I jump around nonstop all day. But, you know, between, like, Grandma's Cottage, Deep Cut Thin Lizzy songs, like, and then, like, texting Jason randomly where he's like, have you checked out this Argent video? Which is the new band we're obsessed with.
Now, new to you or new?
No, we were aware, but now we're going on a deep dive.
But they're not new. They're not new to music.
Oh, no. This is a 70s band. Yeah, no.
Right, exactly. I want to call out for my listeners when you say a new band we're listening to.
Oh, No.
I don't know how many new bands outside of the hardcore genre are piercing.
Well, that's the thing. If it's a new band, I know it's probably some slam death metal band that's like no one wants to listen to. But, if it's this, it's us being like, oh, that Rainbow song was a cover of a Russ Ballard song.
Yeah.
It was in Argent.
But, man, Argent had some hits, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, your head up.
And God hold gave your head up. You probably know that from a Vietnam doc.
Oh, 100%. Right. That was the night of the Tet Offensive. Hold your head up. And they also did God Gave Rock and Roll to You.
Yeah.
That was for them to
classic.
Do their version.
And so that's the craziest. I mean, beyond... literally Paul Stanley deciding to be like a turd in the past 2 days. Yeah. it's real disheartening because my 6-year-old has gotten super into Kiss in the past 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Man.
And I don't even really even listen that much Kiss, but like truly, like my wife bought him a Kiss shirt. He won't stop listening to I Was Made for Loving You. Like he was singing awesome. Along to every single song. I'm hoping he doesn't ask what a love gun is because it will be about Paul Stanley's dick. But
right,
like he loves them so much, but it's like this is where I'm like, oh, there are many reasons I'm psyched to have this kid, but like I'm watching him become a fucking metal and classic rock fan.
That's like,
and be nerdy. He's like, he keeps saying over and over, and I told Jace this. He keeps going, Strutter must have been their first song, huh?
I think it was
their first song. It sounds, and I was like, I have taught you to be a snob.
I love
early.
This.
Didn't Wait, he I'll... say something about Hard Luck Women too?
He kept going, this must be from their first album because it doesn't sound like them. And I'm like, yeah, it does. It sounds like Rod Stewart.
How old is your kid now?
6.
Wow. Jesus Christ. That's awesome. Yeah. That's rad. What is the power of, is classic rock like how fathers and sons communicate? Like, is that specific to our generation? But now that I'm thinking about it, my dad listening to his dad's music in the car is kind of like a weird. Is it the way we like
it might be lived? The only way I talk to my dad if like to get him to stop talking about Jordan Peterson like for 2 seconds. Like honestly, like it's like let's talk about
why would you stop that?
I know, that's the part I love. I just would like to hear more about masculinity.
Oh, that's so
and
funny.
About how I don't live up to it.
I thought he was like a young guy's guru. I didn't know there was any adult
He's
like grown up.
Also, if you're, you know, a recovering dude who hangs out too much on YouTube at like 1 a.m, you eventually get there.
Right,
it's like he discovered him and Christopher Hitchens recently, and I'm
like
oh,
the self improvement spiral that gets you out of like that you're like I'm really into yoga. Yeah, I'm duct taping my mouth closed at night. Okay, now I'm outside of a fucking library with a fucking.
Well, I had to go on like a tangent the other day and be like, hey, you should check out Adam Curtis's Hypernormalization. If you're going to be watching 4-hour terribly made videos, watch one that actually works. And that all of these idiots ripped off, and now we have to deal with 4-hour videos of monsters with bad ideas.
I just watched Hypernormalization for the first time like a month ago, dude. I had never seen it. Someone recommended it to me. I think it was Henry Zebrowski, if I could name drop guys. To
I was
going to
guess the Tamanik or Zebrowski. So.
Right, those are the good guesses. I think it came up on a High and Mighty, where and he mentioned it, and I was like, fuck, I've never seen that. And I put it on and I was distressed. Sometimes when someone just says something that's so right, it hurts. And you're like, there's no arguing this.
I've never seen this. What is it?
Okay. How to articulate this? Jason, it rules. It's Adam Smith is a BBC documentarian.
Curtis.
Okay.
Oh, Adam Curtis. Sorry. I'm already
I'm so blown.
Allow me to do this. Robert Smith from The Cure.
He's depressed for 4 hours.
Adam Curtis makes these BBC docs. One of them is called Hypernormalization, and it's like a 3.5-hour documentary where there's no talking heads. It's just voiceover and like fair use news footage.
Okay.
But he kind of tracks how the hypernormalization of bad behavior, of how once people stopped getting in, like people in power just didn't feel consequences. It just maps how that goes all the way from like back to like the nuclear bomb to Trump. It's like a 2016 or 2018 doc.
Yeah. It's such like thesis of like, we didn't just show up here. Like it's been this. It moved from this to this to this. This is the movement of capital. This is the movement of mass marketing, advertising, which then gets into other ones he's done. And you're like, it's both a perfect tool for just like stoner going whoa.
Yeah.
But also, then you're like,
no.
And also. Right. True.
And if you're at all a fan of the medium, the idea that there's no talking heads and no talking to camera, and you're just like kind of as if you're changing channels over time, it's like really intense in that way. Like now I'm obviously pitching it to Jason as a stoner.
No, I love it. I love the idea.
And then Morgan Spurlock shows up halfway through and he's like, I'm eating a burger.
All I've eaten is quarter pounders. The big I think the big linchpin he uses in it is the no no consequences for the WMD's lie. It's like once politicians realize they can get away with that, justifying killing people and invading a country for a made up thing and they don't get in trouble for it. Once they do that, there's no coming back. That's like the bridge too far.
You move
they can
the line,
do whatever
and
they
you
want.
Keep moving the line. You're not pulling the line back. And then all of a sudden we're at 2016.
We're at,
well,
yeah.
You certainly, you in 2023, you still feel the line moving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like it's all around. You know something's up.
Like, our former president, like, was indicted, and almost everyone I know is like, yeah, but nothing's going to happen.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
That's
insane
to imagine. Of
it's
like,
the worst thing ever.
Not even nothing's going to happen. It won't even affect him.
Yeah.
Right.
Whereas
he'll
like,
just run for president again,
and
man.
And he just fucking becomes president again.
But this
fucking
is also...
Dan Quayle forgot an E in potatoes, and he was drummed out of society.
Oh, yeah. They almost
wears that brown tan suit.
Howard Dean yelled weird and was like asked to leave America.
It felt crazy like, to show that Chappelle Howard Dean sketch at a certain point in sketch classes at UCB because I was like, I don't even know what the joke is anymore.
Right,
we're way beyond this fucking thing. It doesn't matter.
Can you imagine being Howard Dean like the morning before he's told that everything's over and they tell him and he's like, wait, what? The screen?
But this, I'll say this, this is, to bring it back to, this is also why, to me, and it connects to also, like, punk, the punk I love, a lot of the punk I love, a lot of the metal I love, but, like, the in the face of all of this, hold your head up high, it's like, you have these, like, I get why my kid is liking Kiss. Like, he doesn't like the songs that don't have, like, a fucking massive chorus that you just yell over and over, and essentially the good version of Make America Great Again is like why I like punk slogans, but people are dumb, and I am as well, and you like that thing that's just like, yeah, the boys are back in town. Like, I just, like, it truly is.
Yeah.
Like, fucking Thin Lizzy is the great, I mean, my wife could probably do with less Thin Lizzy in our life. There's so much talk singing.
No way.
I mean, and I say no way when I wear a Thin Lizzy hat every day of my life.
For me, the fucking mantra song chorus is back in the New York groove. Like, I put that on when I'm landing at JFK because it just...
Me too.
One time, Gavin Spieler described, we were like just blasting that song, me, him, and Rogers, all from New York. We're all just like having a blast, blasting that song. And Gavin's like, this is the song that plays when you sign with the Yankees. Like when you move back to, you've been in another city and then you come back to the Yankees, that song plays. And that just juiced me up in such a way that that is my Make America. Like, it's like, yes,
oh,
I'm behind
God, yes.
it. Yeah.
Jason, should we pull it all together and maybe blow fucking Gavis's mind? Who wrote New York Groove?
Do it.
Russ Ballard from
Russ
Argent.
Russ Ballard from Argent.
From Argent.
Hold
sung
your
by
head
Ace.
Up.
That's fucking crazy. Sung by Ace Frehley of Kiss, which is like, holy shit.
He did an original version. English musician.
Man,
producer
it all
Russ
goes
Ballard.
Back to fucking Argent, man. Don't you know?
Hey, man. You got to draw the red lines, man. Hypernormalization is about
it's
Russ
all
Ballard and
Argent, man.
But also, like, this is why.
This is your guys' 4-hour documentary.
Yeah.
It's like
truly.
How everything gets back to Argent. It's like, who is this for, guys?
But it is truly, like, this is also one of the reasons, honestly, we do The Hawk. This is why we bonded over classic rock. This is, like, it's kind of connected to even when I would do the podcast with Nate Smith, What's That From? We're just remembering shit. Is like, in insanity and in the world, the thing that maybe brings me the most joy is connecting all these dots and just going deep on music.
Well,
and
it hits nostalgia. In addition to music feeling good because it's a beautiful art form, like it hits nostalgia. And then for us of a certain age, that tracks you going through your memory. Maybe it's making you think of family members specifically.
Oh God,
you know, I have a distinct memory. Here's a classic rock dad-son connection. I have a distinct memory. This is a bad habit my dad used to have. He used to pump the brakes to the beat of the music at red lights. And I
know exactly what you're talking about.
I distinctly remember, and he worked, as I said earlier, at Fox 5, so he worked 3 to 11 because he worked all the way through the 10 o'clock news, and he would leave at 11, and he would drive to and from the city, and he would get home around midnight. So once I was 16 or 17 and my curfew was around 11:30 midnight, my dad was frequently picking me up, which was a little dicey because he was the punisher. He was the judge. So you didn't want to be too lit in front. But he was also the alcoholic. So like there was like a little bit of a bond of like, he might know I'm drunk, but you just don't want to be like getting, you don't want to have to deal with him.
Right, but, right.
So you get in the car.
Most of your relationship as with my dad, just trying to find a way to not deal with him.
I got a really awful way to not really have to deal with him. Yeah. I mostly just talk about him with a person I pay $300 an hour.
I buy more Thin Lizzy and Argent records than call my therapist to try to get it re-upped this morning.
I mean, honestly, like, it's the only thing I bonded with my dad over.
Right.
Was like, you know, we both like, he was a huge Neil Young fan.
Oh.
And I got into it because of him, and he would always be playing Neil, and we, you know, we went and saw Neil together, and, you know, we really bonded over that. Other than that, you know, he yelled at Fox News and loved guns, you know, like.
It's funny that the music taste bonding doesn't ever, I mean, and maybe listeners, let us know if this is specific to you, because I don't know anyone who the listening bonding jumped up where you got, I don't know anyone who got their dad into a band.
I got dad into Elliott Smith.
Really?
Oh, that's funny.
Wow, you were aiming for a specific goal with your dad. Yeah. You're like, all right, if you're going to be sitting here watching Fox News, I'm going to get you depressed rather than angry.
I know, but it was something that I knew he would like for some reason. I thought it would connect with him. And he cranked, like, he had his own copy of EXO, and he would crank that.
I could see if you're a diehard, if you're a big Neil Young fan, you can find some overlap.
They go together really well.
Works much better than when I once gave John Zorn playing Ornette Coleman free jazz covers to my dad. And then he tried to give it back to me, and I was like, that was a gift. Like,
hey,
dude,
he's like, hey, Jeff, do you have this one? Do you have this one right here?
Like, I know where it came from, motherfucker.
Oh, did you have this, though?
I will say I bought him a BOC shirt recently, a Blue Oyster Cult shirt.
Nice.
Okay. All of a sudden he was talking about him. I was like, all right, here you go, brother. Like, let's bond somehow.
Yeah, I know I used movies for like the last 15 years of my dad's life to be like, yeah, we love Steven Seagal, right? we can talk about that no matter what level of intoxication you are. I didn't even finish this thought. Weed is great.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Weed is great.
I'm in the car, drunk at like 16 or 17 years old, but at a red light, Deep Purple's Smoke on the Water is playing.
Oh,
and it's
dun,
dun, dun, and he's smashing the brake, and I'm going, I'm like, but I can't sell that I'm like drunk or it's bothering me. So he like looks over at me. I'm like, thumbs up, like, the smoke is on the water, Dad. Oh God. Just like, bum, bum. It's such a driving pump in the, like, that song has such that heavy beat there. Oh,
yeah.
I feel
and
like
I would have been sitting in the
right
back
now.
Going, actually, it's John Lord's organ that's the heaviest parts in that. Like, shut up, sober idiot.
And I'm like, sorry, Dad, that's my straight edge. Friend.
My straight edge friend's a real dick about music sometimes.
Yeah, and he lives pretty far away from here. You got to drive to Connecticut.
Yeah. Sorry.
87 North. Let's go.
Maybe Mike and the Mad Dog's on. We can fucking listen to them yell at us the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Going back, my dad worked 3 to 11, so that means he was home all day or like doing stuff around the house all day. When I wasn't in school, that was a disaster. Like, when I was in school, it meant I saw my dad like for an hour in the morning and then not again until an hour the next morning.
Yeah.
But when we were home, he would just listen to talk radio all day. It was Imus, Mike and the Mad Dog, Opie and Anthony, Ron and Fez, and Howard. Yep. And he would just listen to that all day. And that's just what's playing in my house while my dad is like lifting weights and doing karate and like sanding shit or whatever. Like, and that just burned. And like, now I'm a comedian who does martial arts and has substance issues. Like,
we all become that. Yeah. I mean, Mike and the Mad Dog is the soundtrack to me. To us driving late at night, my dad angry because he's trying to stay awake to get to see my brother at college and be angry at him at college. But just me trying to sleep in the back seat with fucking Mad Dog screaming in my ear.
was like, just like, oh my God, I hate sports. This is a nightmare.
Hey, Paul O'Neill. All right, fucking let me go back to sleep, please.
But yeah, I mean, and I'm kind of glad Mike and the Mad Dog was the only one my dad listened to. He didn't do the talk radio because I feel like that would have just angered him more in life.
Yeah.
I'm glad the classic rock could just calm him enough to get him out of the house most of the time. Oh, dad's not working in his office this weekend? Fuck. God damn it.
My dad would listen to Dave Ramsey.
Oh,
are you familiar with Dave Ramsey?
I don't know Dave Ramsey.
He's this guy out of Atlanta who's just like, and here's how you can save some money. You know, you're going to have to sell that car. You know,
he's a big money guy. He used to have a blog, right?
Yes.
A pretty famous blog or website.
Yes.
Like, I remember him from that. Yeah.
Yes. And he's like, here's how you're going to save for that Disney trip. And it's just all this just like insane stuff. Like, he would listen to that all the time and loved it.
I mean, it's like becoming our dad, where it's like, you know, complain about all this talk radio around it. Then what do we talk about? Halftime Two is like Coast to Coast with Art Bell. Well, like, it's
that's
just
what dad,
the
dad
other
loved Art Bell too.
Yeah.
Dad loved Art Bell so much, he used to start going to all of the guests' websites.
Oh, boy.
And he would like bring them up all the time. Like, I remember there was this guy named like Jeff Rentz or something. And this dude was like, In 2000, you'd go to his website and it's just this cartoon with like wispy gray hair and like a guy in a button up shirt. And dad would go to that for news all the time.
Oh,
and like, that's the start of like, you know, I mean, for all I know, this guy's Q.
Right. Yeah. He's,
he's reading
the
Time Life Mysteries of the Unknown series on the website.
I will say that I do really, truly, in my heart, believe if dad were still alive, he'd be into QAnon.
Sure.
Oh.
Which is a fun thought.
Yeah.
My dad was weirdly a young, like, you know, just he had a GED. He dropped out of high school at 15. His father-in-law got him a union job. He was like in and out of, you know, trouble.
It
and,
basically sounds like you're reading off Springsteen lyrics.
Well, my dad was
blew up when, the chicken man all night.
Got his GED.
He wanted to marry my mom, and my grandpa, his rules were, get a GED and I'll get you a union job and cut your hair, because my dad had waist length hair. He's like, then you can marry my daughter.
Oh my God, that's the best.
My dad had waist length hair, was 6 years older than my mom, and was a boat valet / car detailer. Those were his two jobs. He would like add pinstripes to cars and spoilers and shit and park boats at the marina. And so my dad was such like, and so, oh, I know why I'm telling this now. So he was kind of like white trash, uneducated level of politics, kind of casually racist. But I think working in the New York City, and his colleagues were all like, now, as a grown up, I would go and work with him some days. So my dad, because that's like the union bullshit, right? He's like, I need an extra hand. He's like, my son will do it. We'll keep the money in the family. And it's like, yeah, bring your son down. So I would go and like work as a IOTSI stagehand at like 19 years old. Yeah. And be like, go out there and hold the ladder when Murph goes up there. It's like, okay, fucking 19, like home for the summer, just making insane. But I think being around these, now looking back on them, guys, this guy, Murph, lived on the Upper East Side, was like a movie buff whose wife was from Japan, and he had been back and forth, and he sat on the floor in his house to eat dinner and shit like that. My dad would use that to bust balls, but to me, I was like, whoa, what's happening in New York City? I'm so used to it. So it, weirdly, in his old age, on his deathbed, he was like dying around the time of the first Obama election, and he had gone full liberal. He was like, we have to vote for this Barack Obama guy. And he wasn't able to go to the polls because he was in bed dying. He's in hospice. And my mom, who's not political, who has voted for Trump because I like his casinos and he's handsome. And it's like, handsome? He does kind of look like my dad.
That's about close to the same reasons my family had, too.
Right. But he was like, at the end, was like totally, and he was saying things like, it's about time black people had power. Like all this, like kind of like, I don't know. Like it was just a really interesting turn of events. And I wasn't even political yet, but I was like living in New York City and just having what I consider good politics now, but not from a political bent of like just being accepting of all different people. And then seeing my dad make that turn, a guy who you'd seen use slurs, like old fashioned slurs you never heard of before. Right. And then he just makes this turn and I'm like, fuck, dude. And I think about that like every day with everyone out there. Having seen it live with my dad, I'm like, there is a chance to turn these people. Yeah.
There's a chance. Yeah.
He wasn't like a news junkie. He read just like Newsday, the Daily News, and the Post every day. Like, he didn't like watch news all the time, except
also,
for
honestly,
the Fox 5, 10 o'clock news.
Yeah. Right. But I was going to say, that's the way to possibly turn more open-hearted as you get older, is to not read the fucking news all the fucking time.
Right, right.
Like, I think there truly needs to be fucking media literacy classes for our... I'm not worried about my kid on a fucking iPad. I'm worried about my mother and my fucking mother-in-law on an iPad.
Yeah, like, take away our parents' screen time. Like, they should have limited screen time, and our kids should be able to watch whatever the fuck they want.
It doesn't
matter.
Put on
Pixar all day, son.
Hey,
I gotta go to my mom's house and cut the cable. I gotta fucking cut through the wires outside of my mom's house to save my fucking gay nephew.
I watched, you know, as you did, when we all did, I watched Cobra and Commando a billion times at 8 and 7, and I turned out wonderful, and I think I'm turning out better than some of the people who didn't do that shit.
I was trying to do a bit for a while that was like, I grew up watching fascist propaganda. No 9-year-old should be so anti-internal affairs. How do I have such a strong opinion about internal affairs? Get out of his way. He's just trying to do his fucking job.
But that's also
setting up tango.
I mean, as I get older, and I just appreciate the concept of Valverde even more, that it could allow you to be like, embrace weird fascist pro-American ideas without being completely racist and jingoistic, because it's made up, which is also why The Hawk is in Valverde.
Yeah.
Well, that's where Action Boys takes place as well.
Yeah, exactly. You guys are just doing your podcast at the other end of Hog Street.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful. Now they're doing Valverde in every action movie, but using the phrase separatist nation or mercenary army. They're doing the thing where it pulls its affiliation from any real nation.
Right.
And it's just like, that way it could be like a rainbow coalition of bad guys, too.
Like,
you know,
we don't know the enemy in Top Gun Maverick, do we?
They just have sunglasses on, basically.
Yeah.
No, it's the same as Top Gun, where it's like, they're communist. We don't know what it is.
Well, because it always gets weirder when, especially in an 80s one, where you're like, oh, you were just blatantly like, let's destroy Iraq or something. And you're just like, okay, now I
just
feel uncomfortable.
Hot Shots Part 2 recently, like Saddam Hussein is like a main character. It's like fucking insane.
I think
and
I was watching
so
Red.
Offensive.
I like watched Red Dragon for the first, not Red Dragon. What's the one with fucking Dolph Red? Is it Red Dragon?
Red Scorpion.
Red Scorpion for the first time, because I was like, oh, it's a Zito film. How do I never fucking watch this? But then I was like, I don't know, man. I don't even know what side I'm supposed to be on, according to you all, with these weird 80s politics, Cold War.
Dude, there's
bullshit.
So much stuff going on in that movie. We did it recently for Action Boys. It's so much stuff. It's like Russians and Americans in Africa. And it's like, there's just one layer too much where you're like, Emily Ermey, Arlie Ermey, M. Emmett Walsh. M. Emmett Walsh is so fucking alive in this movie. He's such a welcomed addition in that. But you're right. You're watching it like, I guess I'm just rooting for Dolph. Like, I don't fully understand the geopolitics at play here.
Missing in action, sure. Let's save fucking POWs. Who's going to say no to that? Like, POW the Escape. Sure, let's say POWs. Who's going to say no to that?
Well, also growing up, the action movies we watched, even the ones that weren't war films, the ones that were back home, whether they were even cop shows or cop movies, they always were like Vietnam vets, which was shorthand with the watcher for me to go like, they know how to fuck shit up if you and like, so as a kid, as a kid, I'm like, being a Vietnam vet is one of the coolest things you could be. And then you grow up and you're like, I feel awful. We did that to an entire generation of young people.
Well, because then you watch the Wildlife, that like unofficial sequel to Fast Times at Ridgemont High, that has that character who's obsessed with Vietnam. And I think it's Randy Quaid. And he's like, it was fucked up. And you're like, whoa, okay. And you're yelling at me, I guess. All right, you're valid.
Right, yeah, I was the guy who was just growing up. It's like, once you get back from Vietnam, you're capable of whatever it takes to protect your neighborhood.
I got a Rambo knife. It's cool.
Yeah, right. Right.
And that's classic rock to us in the suburb.
Yeah, that's right? Pretty much it.
What are some, like, let's throw out some songs that we think are classic rock, right? Like, when you're thinking, like, if you had to make a playlist for Aliens, we had to put like 10 songs mm-hmm. on it to be like, oh, this is what we consider classic rock.
Well, if you could only pick one, pick literally any song off the Boston self-titled LP.
Truly.
right, we just covered it, and truly every single one was a Boston rock staple. There's not one song that wasn't.
Yeah. Literally, I always kind of made fun of Boston, and it was just like, oh man, that band sucks.
Yeah.
Because it was a nerdy band. Yeah. And I was more into like Sabbath and Soundgarden.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't want to hear that shit. But man, like going deep into this record for an episode of Hawk Rock Talk, it was just like, holy shit, this is good.
Yeah,
like,
and it's crazy
song,
that every single one was
all
a single.
Bangers.
Right, yeah. But like maybe if you were making it in 2023, you're making this playlist, Staying Power comes into mind a little bit, right? Like making think maybe More Than a Feeling being one of...
More Than a Feeling would be the killer on
thanks
there.
Thanks to Ally McBeal kicking it back up in the air a little bit in the 90s, right? Like, is that part of it? Like kind
Definitely.
Of re-brought it back in and it like...
I would say
no, that was hooked. That was Hooked on a Feeling that Ally McBeal did, not More Than a Feeling.
I mean, off the top of my head, and Jason, you can counter on some of these. Like, and these are bands we don't even like. The Doors, L.A. Woman.
Oh yeah,
we don't even talk about The Doors, but to me, that was a New England, L.A. fucking or New York classic rock staple. I hate it, but
I would say
Black Sabbath, Iron Man.
Hey Joe, Jimi Hendrix.
Hey Joe, I was just trying to think of a Jimmy song. What Led Zeppelin song would we say? Black Dog?
Yeah, it's probably going to be Black Dog.
Yeah, weirdly.
A Whole Lot of Love?
Whole Lot of Love. Is that? I mean, in 2023, it would be Immigrant Song, and they'd call it the Thor song.
The Thor song.
Right,
as Eric Cunningham would call it always, because he didn't know who Led Zeppelin was.
I'd include American Girl, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Do you say Freebird?
Horse with No Name by America?
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, that would be in there. And you're like, I love this Neil Young song. It was Crosby, Stills, and Nash song.
You know what? Personally, I would put on Saturday Night Special over Freebird.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I agree. I mean, Freebird is like the classic, but I mean, they do play Saturday Night Special a lot.
Saturday Night Special is a real good one, man.
Well, it's funny because now what we're talking, like, it's interesting because... When you say prog rock or you say yacht rock, we're talking genre.
Yeah,
when you say classic rock, it's like a blend of genre and achieving the
Southern rock, AOR, prog.
It's like it also means a level of achievement in popularity or ubiquitousness or staying power or something.
Yeah.
So it's oddly like a two-pronged measuring matrix that doesn't really translate, but that's what makes it a little more, because you can make the case that's like, oh, yeah, Freebird is a little more Southern rock, but it's like it is a classic rock song.
It's classic rock,
man.
Yeah. And it's a shipbreak song, because we talk about that. What are the classic rock shipbreaks?
When I worked in classic rock radio, I would throw that on, and I knew I had time to do what I needed to get done.
Yeah, that's
you
like...
You need that long one, maybe.
You need a long one.
What's like Baba O'Reilly or My Generation?
Who Are You? What's the name of that song? I mean, because definitely even that one, like, I just feel like that gets lumped. Baba is in there. That's the thing. Is like, I'm going by like band and what's the one they go for.
Right. Now, would you say like a band like The Cars? That's like outside of classic rock.
That's still classic rock.
Yeah, because at this point, too, and the classic rock goes through phases, like we talk about all the time, like Nirvana is classic rock. Pearl Jam is certainly classic rock.
Soundgarden's classic rock.
Black Hole Sun is classic rock.
Okay. Now, this is blowing my mind a little bit, because I would not have thought that at all.
Yeah.
I think it's because they need to hold on, and they don't have enough of... Unless it's specific, like K-Rock can push it a little bit more, but there's not the alternative station anymore, and enough time has passed that they're like, let's just lump it in. Like, let's just call it what it is.
KLOS does the same thing too. Like yeah. you'll hear a deep cut Judas Priest song, and then it's Audioslave.
Right.
It's,
yeah.
It's something like that.
Interesting. Okay. Radio stations are the arbiters of what's classic rock. Like, so
I think so.
Something that comes out now couldn't make classic rock just due to the lack of radio.
I mean, that's why we talked about the shit song. Like, some songs we do think are singles, partly because they would get played so often because you needed to take a shit.
Yeah, and, and it became classic rock just because of its length. And,
you know, it's the one long diet of
DJs. The early morning coffee consumption of DJs led to long songs becoming classics because they were fucking shitting their bricks all the time. Slow Ride. I mean, I know Foghat is not baby.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I know you wouldn't necessarily put Foghat on a classic rock bands list like a top 10.
Dazed and Confused soundtrack for our generation was huge. The fucking classic rock, because it was like, oh, wait, all of these bands are actually really good is what that soundtrack is.
Right, that soundtrack is not just one hit. It's no one hit wonders. It's all bangers from bands, chock full.
Because it's
bangers.
It's more so even than Pulp Fiction soundtrack, which was huge. But it's like more of like, oh, this is Tarantino's weird ideas about music. Versus like Dazed and Confused really was just like, oh right, Slow Ride. Peter Frampton
hit you with all of it.
Peter Frampton was a sketch. I did for you.
Oh, you did that. Peter Frampton,
where I had to talk with like a vocoder. And
Peter
Frampton,
Guardian Angel. And it was a parody of Touched by an Angel, the TV show.
And I'd be like, nan, you, and you, nan.
And no one could understand you because you wouldn't stop talking out of the talk box, alienated through specificity.
And I wasn't even good at it. I couldn't even do it well. Like, I could see it on your face. Like, this will just do for Maud Night. But like,
I was about to ask, was I even there? Because that could have been one of the shows where I also went on tour and was just like, run the sketch for me.
I have a song. Yep. Curious if this makes. I think it's classic rock, but it doesn't sound or feel like it. The Joker, Steve Miller Band.
Oh, yeah, it's classic rock, man.
Yeah.
You don't turn on a classic rock station and not hear that at least
Joker
five
and Fly
times
like
a
an
day.
Eagle are in
right,
the
right.
Fucking in
Hotel California. As much as I hate that song, that fits under that fucking
Jet Airliner. Kathmandu by Bob Seger.
Big old Jet Airliner.
Yeah,
Seeger's a quiet one of having a couple in there.
He's gonna turn the page.
Oh yeah,
turn the page. Huge.
Yeah,
that one definitely brings a tear when you're on tour and you're like, he's not wrong.
Road songs, man. They always get you. They always get you.
Yeah, the Joker's a huge one. That makes a very big one. Joe Walsh. Life so far.
Life's been good.
Life's been good to me so far. That's a fucking classic rock. Traffic. Mr. Fantasy.
Yep.
I would throw Mr. Fantasy on there.
I'd do Sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
Rock You Like a Hurricane?
Yes. Scorps would definitely get in there. Rock You Like a Hurricane.
And in my head, that's 80s rock, which is not classic rock, but it is also classic rock. But would you put, Dire Straits in classic rock?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. King of whatever? Suede? Is that? No, what song is that? No, fuck.
King of Pain is the
King
Police.
Of Pain. And I said King of Suede by Weird
because
Al.
Because of Weird Al. the reason
classic
we're
rock. Another
entry into...
point to classic rock.
Huge
realizing what the fuck
Huge
Weird Al
point.
Is parodying. Yes. There are certainly polka medleys that I was like, did not know what half the songs were.
Another one rides the bus.
Another one rides the bus, baby. You know, by Bologna.
Yeah.
By Sharona. I didn't know that.
On Jeopardy. You know, there's so many songs. Like, he was a big reason I love classic rock.
Yeah. Same.
Just because he's a huge entry point.
Yeah.
It's the same. My son really liked I Love Rock and Roll, and then it blew his mind that there was I Love Rocky Road.
Like, which is a better song.
It is actually a better song.
Sometimes they are better songs.
He's a very good songwriter.
Yes.
He just is. Attached with a great video. The video's pretty funny.
Yeah,
it's a solid video. But I'm just reeling that we haven't made more Steve Miller the Joker jokes on the
I know. We need to. It's just right there.
Yeah, it really is.
Really love your peaches. Come on
Shake
now.
Your tree. That was an argument just to say that I got into my mother once connected to classic rock because, and
I've said before, like, I love Nine Inch Nails, but Closer's the one song I never liked by them. But it was playing in the car, and she was like, Jeff, this is terrible. I want to blank you like an animal. Like, she was Kevin Meaney. And then I was like, but, like, honestly, without missing a beat, I was just like, what do you think Aerosmith is doing in every song?
Yeah. Right.
What do you think Do Me, Do Me, Do Me is? And you're making me listen to that nonstop? Get out of here.
My Aunt Lori, I think I've told this story on The Hawk before, but my Aunt Lori had a she lived in Salt Lake City, and when I would visit my grandparents every summer, she would just come around, and she was kind of a troubled lady. She partied a lot at that point in time. And this is 1987. I'm nine. And I wake up for breakfast, and I go to the kitchen table, and I sit down, and there's a cassette tape of Permanent Vacation by Aerosmith. And I'm like, whoa, what's this? And I start taking it out and looking at everything. And my Aunt Lori, who I don't think had slept from the night before, was just in the living room, like wanders in. And she comes up, and I expect her to say like some big thing about the band, like, oh, well, they do this song or whatever. And instead, she whispers in my ear, these guys do cocaine. And I'm like, what's cocaine? You know, like, I'm not really that
I'm not that
in.
Plugged in. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought we were going to talk about the song Angel.
But she wasn't wrong. That's the thing. She was not wrong.
If you're going to say anything about Aerosmith, Aunt Lori was probably correct.
That's the only thing you can say about them. Sayonara. What is their fucking tour called? What did we see
peace,
today?
Peace out.
Peace out. Aerosmith's last tour. We immediately were like, well, here's the video. I guess we should do a video ourselves making fun of it somehow on The Hawk. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Weirdly similar aunt cocaine story. My aunt used to babysit me all the time. And my mom said, I only heard this story for the first time like 3 years ago. Uh-huh. My mom said that she took a mirror off the door and put it on the bed because she was like rearranging her room. And I went over to the mirror with a card and was chopping it and sliding around. And my aunt was like one of my major babysitters, but she's my mom's younger sister. And my mom had me young. So it was like a 17, 18-year-old girl babysitting me. And my mom would be like, excuse me. I'm going to not use names here. Excuse me, sister. But and so my aunt was like, I had to stop doing cocaine around you then.
Wow.
I didn't
stop doing it altogether, but just not around you.
I will say, as the straight edge guy here, that in connected to cocaine, but then this is also connected to our earlier conversation of these movies didn't fuck me up. One of my favorite.
Oh, I thought you were going to connect it to Steve Miller Band, and I was hoping for that.
So I was listening to The Joker. When I was at summer camp, one of my favorite things to do instead of sports was to take, there was all this limestone by the trees, and I would break it up and say that I was selling cocaine and like replicate like Scarface and shit. Like, and
did
so
anyone
again,
buy it?
Cheech, get the yayo.
Yes. And I would do a lot of like rub it on my teeth and go, oh, it's good. It's like this good stuff. I take it back. I mean, fuck me up, and this is why I'm a monster now.
Along those lines, I never did coke as a kid. That's a crazy sentence to say, but I never did coke when I was younger. That's a weird kind of... lot of vagaries in that sentence. I can't let you try to land what I've actually done. But all I know about it is that sometimes you have to put a switchblade into a pack of it and like lick the switchblade to make sure it wasn't fucking fake or something. Dish soap or whatever they would always say. You know, something like, it's baby
powder.
And
then you take that switchblade and you shove it into fucking... Billy Drago's dick and throw him out the window like an Invasion USA.
Hell yeah. Dudes, thanks for helping me learn more about classic rock and talk about it. Specifically, please send me some playlists of some of the shit.
I'm 100%.
We're going to send you some stuff. You'll get some prog rock. You'll get the classics of classic rock.
Dungeon Synth.
Hook me up with some Dungeon Synth.
Grandma's Cottage.
Oh, yeah.
Argent. You're going to get the best Argent playlist ever.
I'm
going to
end up being like a weird Argent head and everything. long story about how I got into it.
Have you fucking
But you know,
heard
back
Argent?
In the New York groove, Bobby Ballin or whatever? I'm like, I don't even know the details, but I'm like half explaining it right. Hypernormalization, man. It's Adam Curtis Smith and the fucking Jonestown boys.
Gabriel, you know the key. You don't have to be right. You just got to be loud and adamant about it. My wife knows just like your wife does.
Loud and adamant is pretty much my entire social lifestyle.
Only when you're going to bed do you realize I told the wrong fact and I stuck behind it.
No one called me out on it because I am a human steamroller.
I'm beating myself up because I yelled that Michael Ironsides was in a movie and then like no one knew what I was talking about. And then I realized I was wrong anyway.
Delroy Lindo is in Iron Eagle. I fucking, exactly. I didn't mean Michael Ironside was in Iron Delroy. If people want to hear more of these esoteric music conversations and hear more about The Hawk and Val Verde's classic rock station, where can people find yous to over there?
Well, we just launched a Patreon, so you can go there. It's patreon.com/1089thehawk.
1089! I never figured out the number.
108.99, what was it, 91.1 The Hawk?
Yes.
Never forget.
We did decide today that it was K-W-H-W-K. We're merging. It's either a K or a W all in one world.
Yes. But, you know, we have three tiers there and, like, you know, a ton of bonus episodes. We do another show called Hawk Rock Talk where we just do deep dives into bands and talk about it. Like, we've done an episode on Queen. We've done an episode on Genesis where we just do a deep dive. You get, music clips and stuff like that. We just released a Hawk Rock Talk Classic Albums where we did a deep dive on Dark Side of the Moon.
Ooh.
And that's on the Patreon.
Yeah. And you can sync that episode up with Wizard of Oz. And it is unlistenable and unwatchable, but you can sync them
Dorothy
up.
Dorothy falls off the bridge right when I'm yelling at Jason that I hate the song Money.
Yes. Yeah. But also, you know, you can find 108.9 The Hawk in, you know, anywhere you get podcasts. And, you know, there's a great
whatever you're listening to this on right now, pull out your phone.
Yes.
Search it on
that
podcast
app. Check it out on Bitcher or whatever.
At minimum, subscribe. Just subscribe. Throw your name in the hat. Just add the data. Add the gigs to your phone.
Yes. You can check it out.
And listen, great, but at least add it. Listening would be even better.
Maybe a 5-star review. You don't ever have to listen to it. Just throw it in there.
But we do have, we've had some amazing episodes lately. Of course, Gabrus, you were on. You were wonderful.
Yeah, that's maybe a good starting place if you're listening to this podcast.
Exactly. And then you find our Paul Scheer episode, our Daily episode, our Tom Sharpling episode, our Julie Klausner episode, 2 episodes of Zach Cherry. We don't stop, baby.
Yeah,
bangers. Banger guests.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of really, really killer guests. And that's what we do. And some episodes don't even have a guest. It's just me and Jeff doing a shitload of improvised characters.
Everything you heard today, but improvised through characters.
But improvised through characters. Basically, 100%. That's what it is. You also check out our website. It's 1089 The Hawk, and all the information is there.
Oh, hell yeah. Check them out, guys. I'm their socials will be in these posts. My podcast is actionboys.biz. It's an action movie podcast, 70s, 80s, and 90s movies. If you don't know at this point, I don't know why the fuck I'm telling you. But it's where my bread is buttered, so I'll just remind you, please. And also, speaking of bread is butter, why don't you check out 101 Places to Party Before You Die, still on HBO Max. I'm no longer saying now on HBO Max. I'm saying it's still, I guess I should say, still on Max, depending on when this episode drops. Yeah. But you
when
know
it becomes fuck. Max, who knows?
Yeah, it might not still be there. I don't think we cost anything residuals-wise, but who knows, whatever weird insurance fire my fucking show disappears during. You can never tell.
Thank it's you, all Sazla. Gone.
The tape's Thank- burned.
The tape's burned.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast. in a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now, somewhere, somehow,
body blow, body blow, body blow.
Someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!